Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special episode paying tribute to Pearl Harbor survivor Mickey Gannich, who passed away May the 4th at the age of 102. Whether it was Pearl Harbor, a professional ball game, or even the White House, Mickey always lit up the room with his quick wit and his passion for keeping the history of Pearl Harbor and World War II alive. And even as a centenarian, his memories of December 7th, 1941 were crystal clear.
See all these ships burning. All people shooting boats out in the water, picking up people that were blown off the ship there, all harboring, and see everything up high enough, gone but 70, 80 feet up in the air above the ground there, and that was enough to see over the top of these buildings that they had. So I had a bird's eye view of what was going on, so I could see what was happening there, and saw the USS Nevada, the battleship would try to get outside the harbor, which is the foolish and craziest thing to do. If it had been sunk in a channel, nobody would have been able to get in and out. So they finally wised up and grounded it, run to the ground. Well, we feared it couldn't happen to us. Like I said, we'd been talking about maybe getting to war with Japan there for a long time. In fact, some of our people were even helping. Some of our people, like, joined the Flying Tigers there with General Chenalta. But since we were not in the war, they were on their own. In fact, some of our pilots went over to join the RAF, the Royal Air Force, flew with them, even though the country itself was not in the war, because we had sympathizers there, but we were not in a war itself, technically.
Which changed on that morning for you. And I know it's a long time ago, but I'm sure you still remember what that felt like. How frightening or alarming or just jolting was that?
Well, it really, you don't have, when that's happening, you don't have time to think about it. You're trained to do job. My job was to do this and do that. Same with the other people on the ship. But really, you don't think about it. All you can think about what could have been and then think about the future, what you can do to get ready for the future. All you can do is prepare and do what you can there. Some people's job is to repair the ship. Some people work on the engine. My job at that particular time was a lookout, because that was the lowest position of my gang at that time. I was the newest one in that gang. And so just think about what could have happened, but you don't think about it. You don't have time to think about it.
And I'm sure every time you go back, you see things and understand things maybe you didn't before. But one of the most striking photographs from December 7th is of the destroyer USS Shaw exploding.
Pieces of it there, when it exploded, fell on us. We were that close to it.
So you saw that happen in real time?
Well, I saw the result. I didn't see what, I didn't happen to be looking in that particular direction, because I'm looking around, see what else I can report there. So I didn't see it, but we saw pieces of it there that we recognized as pieces of the USS Shaw. That was quite an explosion.
When that second wave of the attack was done, was there concern that, we don't know if it's over? What happens next?
Well, we figure there's going to be an invasion. Mm-hmm. Getting ready. In fact, that night, all people were instructed to go to the Army, get rifles and ammunition and canteens and stuff to get ready to go ashore to help the Army repel the invasion, because they figured it could be invaded.
How'd you feel about that?
Well, the Navy, when we're trained, we're not trained so much with rifles, all like the Marines in the Army there. So a lot of us there would be a detriment there, because we wouldn't be that capable of handling rifles and stuff like the Marines in the Army would there. So some of them were a little bit leery, and some of them never even had a gun in their hands or up close, and so everybody's a little bit leery about what we can do with this there. But we were ready, because we didn't know what to expect.
Well, sure. So that makes me curious about what the days and weeks that followed were like? What kinds of things were you doing? What were you hearing?
Well, just trying to fix it up at the ship there and wondering whether there's going to be anything more, waiting for news of what was happening there. And we did find out there that blocks along there, see, we were attacked there. So the next morning, Franklin Delano Roosevelt got Congress to declare war on Japan. We had blocks along, people lining up there. The men were going in the service. We were attacked there. The country is united. Everybody wanted to do their part there. So up to that time, the men were the wage earners and the women were staying at home taking care of the family and the kids. Now the men are gone. So what happened? The women stepped in. They started building planes, tanks, guns, ships. They did everything. You've seen the sign, "We can do it there."
Rosie the Riveter.
Rosie the Riveter. They did do it. In fact, I had two sisters. They were Rosie Riveters. One worked at Treasure Island, and one worked at the Oakland Naval Supply Depot. They're doing their part. The men were gone. That's how the women got into the service. So between the No Third attack at Pearl Harbor and the women stepping in and doing furnished us with what we needed, we won the war.
It would be a long effort, and you'd be a part of a lot of it in the Pacific. What about the aftermath there at Pearl? Did you have to participate in any cleanup or processing?
No, they had enough of those people. All we doing getting that. In fact, it's less than 2 weeks. We're on our way back to San Francisco, getting new guns, getting ready for fighting a war, getting ready for the worst that was going to happen.
How much did it weigh on you that 2,400 Americans had lost their lives and now these ships and planes and so many things were destroyed?
Well, a lot of us are just thinking about get revenge, get back, get do for someone to do that to us, or that we want to get even. That was, didn't do our part, do what we can do, get back at them and get back there. You can't get back the lives of the people that died there, but we could try to protect the others that are still with us.
And there were men from your ship who were killed that day?
We had lost 23 men injured. I'm not sure how many of them. You know, all those, some of them that were injured, a lot of them died there. But that particular day and that particular 2 hours, less than 2 hours, we lost 23 men plus the injured.
And, of course, the Arizona lost 1,177 and the Oklahoma lost 429.
Yeah.
And you would find out later that one of those men aboard the Arizona was an old high school rival of yours?
Yes. I played football against him there. He went to different school, and he's one of them and still listed. He's on the list of the people who died on the Arizona. He's one of them. But I didn't find that out till I went back to Ohio to visit the next year. That's when I found out he's still on. Now, I'm sure I would have played football against him because I played football against him during our school days.
And what was his name?
It was Howard Royer, R-O-Y-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
He lived about 150 yards down the street from me back in a farm in Ohio.
So you had played against him in high school, and you probably would have been playing against him the afternoon of December 7th.
Yes. Of course, we would have won the game anyhow. There's no doubt about it. We would have won. We had the best team. Because I may be prejudiced a little bit.
Maybe a little bit. And how many times do you think you've been back to Pearl Harbor in all these years since?
Well, I was in and out. Well, then the time in the service, so I many times, because I was on the battleship Pennsylvania, the same ship I was on at whole World War II, where they used us for fire support to the various invasions. So the only thing we did in the Pacific, my ship was the invasion of Attu, Kiska, Macon, Kwajalein, and Uituk, Palau, Saipan, Guam, and Philippines. That's the only ones that invasion my ship was in. On.
The only ones, yeah. You were in more than you weren't in.
Yeah, well, we were not shooting enemy ships. We were shooting enemy troops in support of our troops that were on land.
Well, and I want to hear some of those stories, as many as you're willing to tell. But I'm just curious, with all the times you've gone back to Pearl, and when you go to the USS Arizona Memorial, and you see all those names where your old rival Royer is up there.
Yeah.
What do you think about? What goes through your mind when you examine that loss of life and know how close you were to it?
Close. See, when they assigned me to the ship, they could have assigned me to the Arizona. So I think it's my fortune there, luck was with me, or God was with me there, that I could be there instead they're over here. And so I figured there that God had other plans for me. That's why I think he had other plans for me there, to teach the kids, give them a little history lesson there, tell them a story of what really, really happened there. And I'm doing it for them, really, because they can't do it. They're not here to do it. But I can. I'll do it while I can, and I plan on doing it for years to come, too.
And I know you've been doing it for a long, long time. Is there a part, an element of the Pearl Harbor story that you don't think gets told enough, or that people aren't aware of as they should be?
Well, I learned a lot there that you've got friends. Friends that look out for you, and actually there, you're looking out for each other. You're looking out for them. They're looking out for you. It's a teamwork. Before, it was just on the football field for that particular day. But here we're fighting a war, fighting for our country, fighting for our lives there. So it's meaningful there that you're looking out for each other. That's what I learned. In fact, when I was growing up, I got in trouble many times there. But I learned by it. I make a mistake here because my dad would beat me for doing something wrong, and sometimes he'd beat me for my brothers doing something wrong there because he figured I'd be the culprit. But so I learned by experience here, learned by mistakes here. Do under others like you'd have others do under you, because it's not a one-man war. It's a group of people, a group of services fighting, all working together.
Yeah, 16 million Americans in uniform during World War II. And you mentioned the contributions your sisters made. Out of all 14 of those kids, how many of you were involved in the war effort?
Just my brother, the one that's a year and a half older than me.
What did he do?
He was in the Marines. He spent 21 years in the Marines, and I spent almost 23 years in the Navy. But we were the only ones. But that's really something there, since my father was a draft dodger. Well, you call me a draft dodger, too, because I didn't want to go in the Army. I joined the Navy.
Mm-hmm. Were you and your brother ever in the same place in the Pacific?
Yes.
Did you get to see each other?
Yeah, a couple of times. In fact, I didn't see him until the Korean War. Mm. We met there. I was on an ammunition ship during the Korean War, and he was in the aviation with the Marines there, and he was at one of the air bases in Wonsan in Korea, and we got together there for one short time there. But then after I came back to the States there, I got to see him, but only one time we met overseas.
You know, since we're talking about family, another point on Pearl Harbor that I'm interested in. You know, today if something happens and a serviceman's family is concerned, did something happen to my loved one? I mean, there's phones, there's the internet, there's instant communication. In 1941, I'm sure there was at least some period of uncertainty for your family when they heard that Pearl Harbor had been attacked.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were worried about it there, and communications were pretty hard because telephones would all be jammed up, and so you couldn't call. When we finally was able to call, let them know we're all right, it made a difference there, made a relief to them.
Here's another goofy question for you. Since you were supposed to play a football game on December 7th, and I know you were with the Pennsylvania's crew the rest of the war, was there ever another chance to play a game throughout the war?
Well, we played sports there. In fact, I was a good bowler, and it wasn't until after the war that I organized bowling leagues for my ship there. And I was active in sports there. But during the war, unless you were in port, and it'd be important in back in the United States, because we were back and forth at different times there. We could go to games, and things were quite limited.
One of the things that Mickey often brought up was the idea that December 7th, 1941 game against the football team from the USS Arizona was never canceled, just postponed. It is not a stretch to picture him in his favorite three-point stance in the great beyond, finally lining up to settle some unfinished business. We'll have more memories from this amazing American when we come back. What a gift Mickey Gannich was to the rest of us. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.